Okay, so listen to this.
Most businesses consume cash. Very few ever create it for the security holder on a regular basis.
Right, and that exact phenomenon, the structural consumption versus the actual creation of cash, it's the definitive problem of capital allocation.
Oh, absolutely. It is the core issue.
Yeah, we are dedicating this deep dive to formally decoding that problem today. So the parameters of our discussion center strictly on the article from the Averaging Up collection.
Right, and it's worth noting that the analytical framework we're dissecting here draws directly on the book, The Infinite Investor.
Exactly. Our mission for you today is to decode the most fundamental property of any business. We're not analyzing growth rates today.
No, not at all.
We are not measuring the width of a competitive moat. We are isolating what the author defines as the direction of absorption.
Which is such a powerful concept.
It really is.
Yeah.
And to understand this, we have to establish a fundamental premise. Every business, stripped down to its absolute physics, is a flow of capital between two distinct reservoirs. So you have reservoir A, which is the toll, and this represents the cash collected today from current operations. And then you have reservoir B, which is the growth.
Meaning the expansion funded for tomorrow.
Precisely.
It is a closed thermodynamic system in a way. You have the capital generated by the existing asset, which is the A, and you have the capital demanded by the future asset, which is the B.
The toll and the growth.
Right. Now, historically, most analytical frameworks, they focus entirely on the volume of capital in these reservoirs.
You just look at the size.
Exactly. They ask, well, how large is the toll, or how aggressive is the growth? But the volume is actually secondary.
Because simply having a toll reservoir and a growth reservoir, that doesn't explain how value is structurally created.
No, it doesn't.
The critical factor is how these two interact under the hood, which sets up this absolute distinction between additive and multiplicative businesses. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
If we look at the two structural equations presented in the article, we first have the additive business. The equation here is simply A plus B, right? Addition.
Yeah. In the structure, the growth, the B, is a distinct separate line item. The toll, the A, must physically pay for it.
It has to fund it directly.
Exactly. And this is where the vast majority of all global businesses live. They are constantly, endlessly pouring today's cash into tomorrow's expansion. The machine literally has to pay for its own upgrades.
Precisely. In an A plus B structure, the cash generated by today's operations is consumed by the capital expenditures required to fund the future.
Right.
If you are building a new factory, or laying new fiber optic cables, or opening 50 new storefronts, your A is paying for your B.
And what matters in that additive reality is a static measurement, right? Does that required expansion eventually earn more than it costs?
Exactly. But then you have this entirely different paradigm, which is the multiplicative business.
Right, where the equation shifts to A times B. The toll and the growth are no longer separate line items, they are fused together.
They act as one.
And the analogy that really clarifies this for me is a nautical one. Think of an additive business as a steamship.
It has to burn its own fuel, its own cash, just to move forward. But a multiplicative business is a sail catching a wave, or a wind that arrives entirely from the outside.
At zero cost.
Yes, at zero cost. The business builds the sail, right? That's the toll. But it does not pay a dime to generate the wind.
And the prime example the article uses to anchor this concept is Visa.
Oh, perfect example.
Visa operates a massive toll, which is its global payment network. But Visa does not pay for the world to digitize.
Right, they don't buy the smartphones for people.
Exactly. It does not fund the global transition from physical cash to electronic payments. Consumers and banks do that entirely on their own.
The wind comes from the outside.
Yes. Because that growth, the B, arrives from the outside and costs Visa almost nothing to capture, the A structurally overflows the B. The
Wow.
network is already built, so the marginal cost of processing the next million transactions approaches zero.
That is incredible.
What's fascinating here is that this structural difference between additive and multiplicative, it isn't merely some cosmetic categorization for finance nerds.
Right.
It dictates the single most important metric in finance, the actual direction in which capital is absorbed within the firm.
Which brings us to the core concept. Quality is determined entirely by this direction of absorption.
Yes.
It is determined by whether the toll generates more than the growth consumes, meaning the A absorbs the B and
Right.
therefore overflows,
Right.
or whether the growth is so incredibly costly that it devours the cash the toll produces, meaning the B absorbs the A.
That single direction is the signature of the business.
But so, what does this all mean when you are actually looking at a company? I mean, it's not like they report a direction of absorption metric on their quarterly balance sheet. How do we measure the temperature here?
Well, we measure it through what the framework calls the dual duration dial.
The dual duration dial.
Right. Every business carries a dual duration. There is a short duration component, which is the cash return you receive right now.
Okay.
And there is a long duration component, which is the growth compounding for later.
Yeah, but we have to be very clear about causality here, right?
Right.
Because the dial is just a thermometer. A thermometer does not cause the temperature of the room.
Right, of course.
It merely displays the underlying kinetic energy. In the same way, this dual duration dial does not cause the capital flow. It merely displays the underlying direction of absorption.
Exactly. And we can read that display by looking at the extremes of the dial. When the A overflows the B, the dial points short.
Meaning cash is returned to the owner today.
Yes. But when the B absorbs the A, the short component just evaporates because all the cash is being eaten.
Right.
And so the dial weakens to long.
You're waiting for your return in the future.
Exactly.
Let's trace those extremes, starting with what's called the pure A. This is your classic stalwart. Think of See's Candies or Coca-Cola.
Big example.
These entities possess a massive toll with almost zero B, meaning very little internal growth that actually requires capital.
Right.
Because the A so totally dwarfs the tiny B, it overflows massively. The dial point's entirely short. It is almost pure cash return. And I just love the historical detail here.
Oh, the Charlie Munger story.
Yes. Charlie Munger literally had to figure out what to do with physical piles of See's Candies cash.
He physically had to ship it to Omaha.
Right. He shipped it to Omaha to reallocate it because the toll overflows so completely. It simply could not be absorbed internally by the candy business. The internal absorption capacity was essentially zero.
It is a phenomenal problem to have.
Definitely.
But then you move one step along the dial to the free surfer. And we return to Visa here.
Okay, the multiplicative business.
Right. Visa has a magnificent toll, exactly like See's Candies. But it also possesses a massive B, a massive growth runway that just happens to be free.
So the dial points both ways simultaneously.
Exactly. There is massive surplus return right now, pointing short, but there is also free growth compounding for later, pointing long.
So the pure A overflows but cannot compound internally, but the free surfer overflows and compounds simultaneously.
Yes. But structurally, notice that they share the exact same foundation. Both reside firmly on the right side of the capital flow. The A absorbs the B.
Okay, but not every company is a Coca-Cola or a Visa. If a business is not a pure A or a free surfer, it falls somewhere along a distinct spectrum of value creation and destruction.
It does.
And the framework maps this spectrum across three specific operational realities or zones.
Correct. Zone one is exactly what we just discussed. It is where the A absorbs the B. Capital returns to the owner.
Right.
This includes C's, Visa, and even healthy mechanical compounders, like, say, mature cloud software businesses that reinvest heavily but do so well above their cost of capital.
The flow runs in the correct direction.
Exactly. But let us skip the middle for a moment and look at the absolute opposite extreme. Zone three is total devourment.
Total devourment. The name alone sounds ominous.
It is. In zone three, the B absorbs the A entirely. There is no sound toll remaining to carry the company.
Why?
The required growth is so costly and inefficient that it devours whatever cash the tiny toll produces. This forces the business to constantly reach for outside capital, diluting shareholders or taking on massive debt just to survive.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because between the beautiful overflow of zone one and the total devourment of zone three lies zone two,
The silent erosion.
the silent erosion. This is where a genuinely good toll funds a value-destroying B. The most precise analogy here is a conglomerate, where one highly successful cash-generating franchise quietly subsidizes a speculative, unmoted venture.
Right.
It operates exactly like a healthy organism feeding a parasite.
Oh.
The cash produced by the good toll is siphoned off into growth that destroys more value than it creates.
What is critical to understand is that Zone 2 is the most common form of value destruction in the public markets.
Really, the most common.
Yes, because the business itself does not die. The healthy tolls prevent bankruptcy, they keep the entity alive. But the global value of the enterprise steadily erodes.
I see.
The company is mathematically worth less than the sum of its sound tolls because the management team is permanently directing the flow of capital into the wrong absorption.
But wait, I have to push back here. So, what does this all mean for a company investing heavily in its future? Every massive success story looks like total devourment in its early days.
That's a fair point.
I mean, look at Amazon. For years, they burned billions. If I was looking at their plumbing back then, I would have said, "This is Zone 3, run away."
Well, that is the essential distinction between a temporary phase and a permanent value trap. The author addresses this brilliantly using Amazon as the definitive example.
Okay.
For years, Amazon's retail toll heavily funded the massive capital expenditures required to build AWS, their cloud computing division.
Right.
From the outside, that looked exactly like Zone 3. It looked like the B was permanently absorbing the A. But the critical distinction is a credible reversal.
Meaning the plumbing has to eventually flip.
Exactly. At some point, the B must mature enough that it begins to overflow. AWS eventually reached scale, the flow reversed, the A reabsorbed the B, and it became an unparalleled cash generator.
That makes a lot of sense.
An investment phase and a value trap are identical in the present tense. They both consume massive amounts of cash. The difference lies entirely in whether the absorption is on its way to a credible reversal.
So the element of time completely reframes the equation. It's not just a snapshot, it's a trajectory.
It is. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, we see how the direction of absorption unifies financial theory. Historically, academic finance has tried to solve this by isolating these concepts into sealed rooms.
Let's actually walk through those sealed rooms, because I think this is where the theory gets incredibly practical.
The first sealed room is the reinvestment threshold. This is traditional static corporate valuation.
Okay.
For decades, Wall Street has just looked at a spreadsheet and asked, does the return on invested capital exceed the cost of capital today? It measures if growth pays in a vacuum, but it never speaks to the company's survival over time.
Right, just a snapshot.
Exactly. The second sealed room is the absorbing barrier. In 1957, the mathematician Bruno Di Finetti modeled a company's cash reserves as a stochastic process, treating zero as an absorbing state.
Meaning a point of no return.
Yes. But this brilliant model was trapped in the actuarial literature, used almost exclusively to calculate the probability of an insurance company facing ruin.
Hold on, before we lose anyone in the math terminology, a stochastic model is essentially just a way of mapping out probabilities where there's randomness over time,
Right,
right?
a good way to put it.
Like rolling dice, but for a company's cash balances.
Yeah.
And actuarial literature just means the math that insurance companies use so they don't go bankrupt paying out claims. So DeFinetti was basically mathematically proving how close a company is to going to zero.
That is exactly right. But that math was never applied to the quality of a standard business, like a retailer or a software company. It was kept in a silo.
A sealed room.
Exactly. Then you have the third sealed room, which is the surplus. This is free cash flow theory.
Right.
It analyzes the discretion management has when generating more cash than a business can actually internalize. But it treats that surplus merely as a capital allocation problem, like a luxury to be managed, not as a fundamental structural indicator of quality.
So Wall Street is looking at static valuation, insurance mathematicians are looking at the probability of ruin, and corporate executives are looking at what to do with excess cash. They're all in separate rooms.
Yes.
And the unifying theory here is that the direction of absorption is the corridor connecting all of them.
Precisely.
It dictates the distance to that barrier of ruin. The reinvestment threshold just determines which way the flow is running at an exact moment.
Yeah.
And the surplus, that beautiful problem of having too much cash like Charlie Munger, is just what overflow looks like when viewed from the outside.
That is a perfect synthesis. And recognizing how these concepts connect leads us to the ultimate conclusion about investment risk and the mathematics of survival.
Okay, where does this lead us?
To understand this, we have to look at ergodicity. This references the extensive work of physicists and risk analysts like Ole Peters and Nassim Taleb.
Right, ergodicity.
A system is ergodic when the fate of one participant over time matches the average of all participants at a single instant.
Okay.
But the moment you introduce an absorbing state, a state of ruin or bankruptcy, the system loses its ergodicity.
Okay, let's ground this with an example.
Please do.
If 100 people go into a casino and play a game, the ensemble average might say that statistically, the house edge is only 1%. So on average, the group retains 99% of their money.
Right.
But if one person stays at that table and plays that same game 1,000 times, they are mathematically guaranteed to eventually hit a streak of bad luck that takes their bankroll to zero.
They hit the absorbing barrier.
Exactly. And once you hit zero, you can't keep playing. You don't get to experience the ensemble average because the game is over.
That is the perfect translation. You can no longer rely on expected value calculations because once a single path hits zero, it cannot recover.
Right.
Right.
Therefore, in business, what matters above all else is the survival of the path.
And we can read the survival of the path directly through the three zones we mapped earlier. Zone 3, total devalent, mathematically drifts toward the absorbing barrier.
Yes.
It drifts toward ruin or permanent zombie status because it relies entirely on the kindness of outside capital to keep playing the game.
Exactly.
Zone 2, the silent erosion, drifts downward in value, slowly bleeding out its healthy tolls. But zone 1, where the A structurally overflows the B, is entirely different.
It is.
By generating more cash than its growth consumes, it is structurally pushed away from the absorbing barrier at every single turn.
That is the profound symmetry of this analytical framework. Any business on the right side of the flow is distant from ruin, not by chance and not by macroeconomic luck, but by the physical direction of its internal capital.
Which means safety and return are not two distinct properties that you have to balance against one another.
No, they aren't.
They are the exact same property. They're both simply the direction of absorption read at two different distances from the absorbing barrier.
That's exactly it.
The overflow that generates the return is the exact same mechanism that pushes the entity away from ruin.
It's all connected.
When you evaluate a business, do not be distracted by the surface-level metrics. Do not just look at the size of the moat, and do not just look at the speed of the growth. Look strictly at the plumbing.
Look at the plumbing.
Ask the one ultimate question beneath all others, which way does the capital flow? Is the toll absorbing the growth, or is the growth devouring the toll? Everything else is a consequence.
Absolutely.
And I'll leave you with this thought to mull over. We've spent this whole time looking at massive public companies, analyzing their capital flows. But think about your own career, or your own small business, or even your household skills.
Oh, that's interesting.
Are your daily habits an A plus B structure, where you constantly have to burn immense energy and cash just to get to tomorrow? Or have you built a free surfer, where your current skills are the toll and your growth and opportunities come to you from the outside, basically for free? Apply the plumbing to yourself.
This content is educational and reflects a personal analytical framework. It does not constitute investment advice.
Visit averagingup.com.